Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with Susan Franzman.
Hi, Ursula.
Also joining us to host Local Talk is a new member of our Local Talk team, Mr. Ron Gardner. Hello, Ron.
Hi.
Ron puts together KHOI's community calendar, a segment that we air daily to announce some of the upcoming events that you may want to know about. We're looking forward to him telling you more about that towards the end of today's show. But before that, we had a few more things to talk about, an interview about the Heartland Senior Services.
Following that, we'll have an update with Chris Martin about plans for the community Christmas dinner at the First Methodist Church. And we'll talk again with Pastor Mary Jane Button Harrison about the recent changes and new opportunities at the First Christian Church in downtown Ames.
And then we'll go out in the county to explore winter activities with Ron Gardner, KHOI's new reporter from Community Calendar.
So let's get started. Our first interview this hour is about Heartland.
Every month we feature one nonprofit organization as a public information, and this month we are featuring Heartland Senior Services. Earlier in the month, Kay Puttock, who produces this public service appreciation program, interviewed the director of Heartland. This time she interviewed someone who represents one type of person who benefits from the service of Senior Center, a caregiver.
Actually, that person is your father, isn't that right?
Actually, Kay did interview my father, Klaus, because he took care of my late mother while she was ill with Alzheimer's. By going through this with my parents, I learned how those of the people who are shouldering the work of being a caregiver also need regular breaks so they can rest and get some rejuvenation. Heartland provided that. So let's listen.
I'm Kay Puttock, here with KHOI's Community Service Appreciation segment. This month, we've been focusing on Heartland Senior Services. And today, I'm very happy to be meeting with someone who's benefited very much from Heartland's daycare program and who remembers Heartland with great gratitude today, 9 years later. So with me today is Professor Klaus Rudenberg,
who's a professor emeritus from Iowa State in chemistry, I believe it is, isn't it?
Yes, in chemistry, yeah.
And thank you so much for coming here today.
I'm happy to be here.
Now, you have had some personal experience with Heartland Senior Services, I believe, because they helped you with your wife during her last days. And I wondered if you'd like to talk to us about that.
Yeah, she started to have Alzheimer's maybe in 1996. By about 2001, I believe, we made use of Heartland Services. Mm-hmm. And then from 2001 to 2004, when she passed away, we went regularly to Heartland Services.
That's so she went to the daycare program, I believe.
Yeah, specifically. Initially, I took care of her at home.
Right.
There came a time when there had to be somebody always there when she was at home. And since I was emeritus, I did that. But then after a while, then I felt that it would be good that part of the time I wouldn't have to do that, so I wouldn't be tied up 24 hours each day. Although I basically like to do it, but sometimes would be good to do something else.
Of course, yes.
And so the solution which we found then, several days a week, I don't quite remember now, I went with her to Heartland Services at lunchtime, and then we had lunch there.
You had lunch there together?
Together with her and with the other people there. And then after lunch, I would leave, and she would stay there. Essentially, of course, Veronica wasn't a difficult patient because her energy was sufficiently low, and she was mostly lie in a chaise longue. We have sort of a chair.
Right.
It's sitting in our living room, and you look right out of big picture window in the backyard. It's a very nice chair to lie on, and I do it nowadays, actually, sometimes when I have time. And she was lying there and looking what went going outside. And so that was on those days when she went to Heartland first. The other days, I stayed at home maybe she went 3 times a week to Heartland.
Okay.
Or 4 times, and the other days I was at home. That's what I remember right now. Yeah.
Now, your wife, Veronica, some of our listeners might remember her. She ran Cheese and Puppets, right?
Yeah, she started Cheese and Puppets.
I remember her, too. I'd just come to Ames, actually. And when I came to Ames, there were just about 2 or 3 more years of Cheese and Puppets. And then,
during the late 80s.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Of course, Veronica knew a fair amount of cheese from Switzerland.
Right.
And
so you and your wife both lived in Switzerland before you came to America?
I lived in Switzerland for 10 years, and she, of course, is born Swiss.
Mm-hmm.
And we married in 1948 and came to this country in 1948. And I still visit her relatives in Switzerland every year.
Mm-hmm. I'm
very close to that. It's a fairly large clan, actually, mm-hmm. And ran it for about a dozen years, something like that. Mm-hmm. People liked it partly because it was the only cheese store in town, right. Really. And she had some, she had some 120 kinds of cheeses from all over the world and 30 kinds of coffee. I remember that. I didn't participate in the store. I just visited her.
Uh-huh.
But people liked the cheese, and she also liked her personality.
Right.
But she did it well, and she knew how to treat people and how to run a store. It wasn't always easy. You could also eat lunch. I mean, she made soup every morning. She was an early riser, and she got up at 6 o'clock. She made soup and took it down there. And then she had bread from this outfit in Huxley who made homemade bread for a while, the Warrens. And so she made a sandwich. And she had not only cheese, she had also ham, prosciutto and Westphalian ham. A lot of imported stuff.
So it was like a deli.
It was
specializing
partially
in
deli. It wasn't quite as many widespread offerings as maybe New York deli, but a fair amount. And so you could get good sandwiches and soup. So, and many people did who came there for lunch downtown. Yeah.
Well, this is a story that I think a lot of people could relate to, because here was someone like your wife Veronica who was a very successful businesswoman, as you say, with a lovely personality, lots of friends, but became ill with Alzheimer's.
But then at one point, she really realized that it was very serious, and then she got, like many people, quite angry, but she didn't persist in that. She accepted it, and she had at heart a very philosophical attitude towards life. She comes from a minister's family, Her father was a minister. And so she accepted it, and took about half a year, so then she wasn't angry anymore, and she then became very grateful for everybody, including myself, who at that time, maybe that's when we got with Heartland.
Mm-hmm.
Involved, so I would have 2 or 3 days in the afternoon where I could do other things.
Yes, so. I've never actually experienced this myself because I was in America. But for example, when my parents were getting old, it was a big burden on my sister. I mean, you love them, and you're glad to do it, but it's every day, all day. It's a big burden.
Yeah. The other side, of course, it is not only time, but you have to have the patience. A person like Veronica, then the intellectual abilities sort of disappear. There's no logic, as you cannot rationally talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
But what she could do and did to the end of the, until she died, she related to me. I could see when we looked at each other that she related and remembered my name to the very end. So.
Right.
But intellectually, you couldn't talk to her, and so you had to be patient and just be satisfied that she was there and appreciated you.
I mean, you
can relate to people without words.
You can. You certainly
can. So, of course, then another side in taking care of a person is you have to have the physical strength. because at one point they cannot get out of bed by themselves. They cannot go to the bathroom by themselves. So, but it's a lot of detailed work involved there, and to get a person out of bed the right way, you have to have the strength.
Right.
You know, if I wouldn't have been healthy, I couldn't have done it. Uh-huh. Or if I would be not strong enough. But then her legs got more and more difficult mm-hmm. to walk. So at one point I thought I had to get a wheelchair for her.
Mm-hmm.
Almost on the day when that thought sort of crystallized in my mind, she died.
Oh.
Very suddenly. I was going to go to shopping again, to a store, and I was putting on her coat, and then she collapsed. Just sort of a blue, and she died. The doctors then said it was a heart, but it came very, very sudden, which was a big shock for me when it happened, of course. Right.
So just before she needed a wheelchair, really, she died.
Yeah.
So the difficulties, she could still get around.
That's right. She never had to lie in bed, and she was aware of me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, she didn't feel left alone, you know, mm-hmm. in the dark.
Well, thank you so much for sharing this story with us.
Well, maybe I should talk about Heartland.
Right.
The only thing I remember that we went there, and the people were awfully nice at Heartland. They had always a very good... I remember particularly one person, her name was Laurie, so she was more in charge. And then there was another person... I forget her name, or who just dealt more practically with us. But they always were very helpful, and they knew what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all these people in the group where we were, they all were handicapped mentally, some also physically. Well, maybe some more physically than mentally. Some people went to Heartland before they were in a sort of a dire condition, so mm-hmm. just because they were alone and old and frail. And so at the dinner table, we were sitting at a table maybe with four or five people. There were always... Some of them were mentally alert and others not.
Right.
I remember there was one woman there who always was very, very happy to relate to Veronica and me.
Mm-hmm.
She was sort of sad when Veronica died. Uh-huh. We didn't come anymore. I went a few times afterwards just to be friendly with all these people whom I really liked. It was a great help, and also they were very competent. In some ways, I could ask them about what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But Heartland, though, was a great place, and I decided to continue supporting it. So mm-hmm. after that, so of course they know how to take care of old people too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
And Veronica enjoyed it, particularly when we had lunch.
Uh-huh.
And all these people who talked to us.
Uh-huh.
Then after lunch, when I left, of course, she could relate more to other people.
Right,
you know,
right.
That, so. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember at one time I was going to say they had a sort of a party with a dance, and Veronica danced with, and she even at her stage, she was still a beautiful person, and physically she was quiet. She wasn't dilapidated, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
She was like a strong person, and so men liked to dance with her.
Uh-huh.
And she liked to dance at Heartland. And I remember dancing there with her. And she enjoyed that.
Uh-huh.
She liked to dance. So, yeah, it was a great, great.
So you would recommend? You would recommend?
Oh yeah, I have absolutely no reservations mm-hmm. whatsoever about Heartland. All were very, very good people.
I've been talking to Professor Klaus Rutenberg about Heartland Senior Services. 9 years ago, he was using the services at Heartland Senior Services for his wife, who eventually died of Alzheimer's. Thank you so much for coming in to talk to us today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We just listened to an interview with Klaus Rudenberg. This interview was part of our Public Service Appreciation Program.
That interview was also about the power of love, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
I agree.
Now we have some news of guests we spoke with before Thanksgiving, Chris Martin from Food at First and Pastor Mary Jane Button Harrison from First Christian Church.
During our last interview with Chris, he was talking about his ambition for this year's Thanksgiving dinner. The record from last year, as I recall, was 500. Chris said he hoped they'd reach 600 this year. So why don't you tell us what actually happened? Did you get to 600?
Well, it was 475 people ate in the dining room, and then we did 198 takeouts.
So the total then was?
Just under 700. It well exceeded our expectations. We had the perfect amount of food. Comments on the food were good.
Any particular things happened that were memorable to you about the day?
We had an avalanche of pies. People volunteered to bring about 70 pies. I bet we got closer to 100 pies. And so we sliced and plated all the pie and had these tables laid out. And we got some pretty good pictures there on the Food at First Facebook page.
Were all the pies eaten?
Most of the pies were eaten. No food goes to waste at Food at First. So whatever didn't get used on Thanksgiving got used the next day and the day after that.
Yeah, well, I don't think it'd be too tough to eat leftover Thanksgiving pie.
Yeah, it's not a hard sell. Not a hard sell.
Did you have leftover turkey?
A little bit of leftover turkey, but just like you do at home, our diners get used to having turkey-related entrees for a few days after Thanksgiving. That's what everybody does.
Right.
Pastor Mary Jane is also here. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. It was really wonderful working with Food at First this year. You know, this was our 26th annual Thanksgiving community-wide dinner, but this was the first time we were working with Food at First to make that happen, and so it was really a true gift for us to be partners to benefit the community in that way.
So did you have some of the pie?
Oh, yeah.
Any one that was particularly good?
Well, there was one peach pie, okay? And I eyed that all day, but of course it was gone by the time I got pie. So next year, if anybody wants to make extra peach pie, that would be really cool.
But you're thinking ahead, right?
I'm thinking ahead.
You think you're going to do it again and make it 27th year?
I sure hope so. It was a tremendous event. It always is, and brings together all kinds of people throughout the community enjoying food and fellowship and just the spirit of Thanksgiving.
Well, of course, Thanksgiving is over, and now we're thinking about Christmas dinner, and I have a question for Chris, because that's not going to be at First Christian, right? That's going to be a Food at First.
That'll be our regular location at First United Methodist at 516 Kellogg.
And so what's different from every other day?
The quantity. The quantity's different. We expect to see, I would hope, 350 at that meal. It kind of depends. Last year was about 250. The year before that was about 350. Kind of depends on what it's like outside. If it's a warmer day, we'll see more people.
So does the same hold true for the Christmas dinner as a Thanksgiving, that anybody from the community is welcome to the dinner?
It's identical. It's identical. Everybody's welcome to come.
Now, at Thanksgiving, you obviously had a lot of takeouts. Do you have takeouts at Christmas?
We'll do takeouts at Christmas. We'll do deliveries at Christmas. We'll pick people up that need a ride to the church and take them home.
And you're also looking for donors for food for that day?
We pretty much have our food lined up for Christmas. We've had donations of turkeys and hams over the last month. We had some leftover stuff from the Thanksgiving meal, too. We had a public sign-up for pies again, like we did at Thanksgiving. Those volunteer slots all filled up. And the volunteer slots to actually put on the meal are also filled up. It's a very popular volunteer activity, so I think I put out 75 volunteer slots, and they were full within a week. We're not looking for any extra volunteers, but I wouldn't tell people to not come.
Okay.
I mean, everybody's welcome to come, and if we can find something for someone to do, we sure will. And if nothing else, come and eat.
Well, it must be fun doing it.
It's a blast.
You must have people coming back every year to volunteer.
We do, and there are people that, you know, we have at Food at First, we have an older gentleman, I can't think of his name, but his job is to come and hand out the ham. He wants to be on the serving line handing out the ham. That's his job.
Nice.
So.
And what time of day is the Christmas dinner?
It'll be the same time as Thanksgiving. We'll serve from 11 to 1.
On the 25th?
On the 25th.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, great.
And again, anybody in the community is welcome to come.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and we have with us Mary Jane Button Harrison from First Christian to give us an update. Before, you were in a big transition. You were just moving. Ames Community Preschool Center.
Yes.
Was just leaving, and you were going to have a new neighbor next door with Good Neighbor right across the street from Fairway. And
that's right.
Right, your old parsonage.
Yes, actually, Good Neighbor moved in and ACPC moved out within about a week of each other. And so Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance is operating now at 613 Clark, which, as you said, was the former parsonage of the church and was no longer being used for that. And so we offered that to Good Neighbor. So now they are neighbors to us and operating there. And they did a remodel, and it all looks really good, and it's really good to have them as neighbors. And ACPC then moved out. They're now operating at 920 Carroll. And so we have a second floor, the entire second floor of our building, which is quite a large building if you've been by it, is open space. And we are now pursuing partners who might be in need of space and have a similar or a compatible sense of mission and desire to help the community that we do.
Well, originally this was, I presume, Sunday school space.
Yes.
And of course, with ACPC, I guess it would be compatible for children. Do you still use those rooms for Sunday school on Sunday mornings?
We don't right now use those for Sunday school rooms. It's a very, very large building, and we have spaces all over it. And so for a long time now, we haven't been using that space. And so we've adjusted our usage accordingly.
It's handicap accessible. Is that correct?
It is. We have an elevator that goes to the upstairs and downstairs. And so it is handicapped accessible, and though we're one of those buildings that still doesn't have air conditioning, there is air conditioning on that second floor that is the available space.
So we're talking about the First Christian Church
at Susan Clark, mm-hmm.
which is the church that's across the City Hall
yes.
in Ames.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So this is wonderful space for a community organization that wants to be downtown.
It is, and we recently went through a visioning process, and one of the thoughts that we had, you know, a few years ago, people were talking about the need in Ames for a community resource center, and where different organizations might come together, and there would be somewhat an enhancement of all services because of the proximity of organizations to one another. So, one thought we have is, wouldn't it be really advantageous for the community and for those service providers if we could come up with a scenario where there would be organizations with complementary kinds of services that could use that facility. It's an old building, but it's a beautiful, beautiful second floor. And this, you still have the beautiful wood floors and a lot of the character that newer buildings might not have. And so it would really be a nice home to an organization that could use it.
Well, we hope somebody's listening who might know of an organization who needs it.
And if anyone would hear, just call the church, 232-5766, if you want to pursue anything related to space use.
Would you repeat that phone number?
Yeah, that
slowly.
Would be, thank you, 232- 5766. That's the church telephone number.
Or presumably can just go to the First Christian Church.
Yes, First Christian Church. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much, both of you, Chris and Mary Jane. Thank you for coming.
You're welcome.
Really appreciate it.
Now, let's take a quick music break and get ready for winter.
It's like a samba, rapidly strumming my heartstrings for you. It can be free, not like bolero, just to have you in my arms, all I want to do. How can I be your string man, strumming my guitar whenever you're blue. Behind my eyes a waterfall's pouring. You never really knew I love you, waterfall. Waterfall, waterfall, waterfall. My heart, it's true, flows like a samba, wandering down this cold stream so blue. When you're with me, it's so soothing. Why do your sad eyes tell me we're through? How can I be your string man, strumming my guitar whenever you're blue?
That was Waterfall by the Planet Passengers, and we want to send out a special shout out to Jane. Welcome back to Local Talk, where we talk about the people, events in Story County and Central Iowa. And we just spoke about Thanksgiving dinner that already occurred and the Christmas dinner that's coming up, done by Food at First. And now we're joined by Ron Gardner, who will help us announce some of the outdoor activities going on around the county. Ron's been doing community calendar for us and many events. And we'll be discussing these events that are upcoming. First of all, Ron, welcome to the team.
Thank you.
Ron, you've been a volunteer here at KHOI now for a few months, maybe about 5 months?
August.
Just recently you started doing the community calendar, which is a daily announcement segment that goes on twice a day.
Yes.
And thank you for taking this on.
You're welcome.
And thank you for joining us today.
And I'd like to know why you're wearing a tie today.
Well, I was reading an article in the newspaper years ago. It was a columnist who was going into the office, and his friend said, "Why are you wearing a suit and tie?" And he says, "Well, I'm going to interview Miles Davis today, you know, the great musician." And he says, "But it's a telephone interview." and he said, "I know, but it's Miles Davis." You know, so I got up this morning and says, you know, this is a great time to show what we can do. But you'll notice I didn't button up the last collar button, you know. This is radio. We can't be too conservative around here.
So, okay.
So we have something to do. Let's start with the Boone County Conservation Board's 2014 snowshoe hikes. There are five of these, each in a different location. So you'll really have a good look at some of the prettiest scenery in the area around Boone.
Are these activities family-friendly? Can children come along?
Yes. The announcement says, family fun for adults and children age 5 and older. Hike for about an hour on rolling trails with beautiful winter vistas. Learn the history of snowshoeing and basic winter hiking skills. Borrow a pair of snowshoes and poles from us or bring your own. Enjoy hot chocolate and a chance to warm up by the fire. Call or email the Boone County Naturalist to reserve your snowshoes at 515-230-8800. 8832 or E. Klein, K-L-E-I-N, at boonecounty.iowa.gov.
That's a lot to remember. We'll have the email link and phone number on our website with the description of this program. Just so people will know what's coming up, could you read the dates and locations of these snowshoe walks?
Sure. These will be on January 4th at Don Williams Park, on January 18th at the Iowa Arboretum, on February 1st at Swede Point Park, February 15th at Hot Trestle Trail, and on March 1st at Ledges State Park. Oh, for information for that, you can go to the boonecounty.iowa.gov/conservation website. And that's not all. On February 11th, they'll have an ice fishing clinic at Don Williams Lake in Ogden.
Last night, I talked with Emily Klein, the camp naturalist from Boone County Conservation, and she told me about some things that I hadn't found on the website. So we have her on the phone. Hi, Emily. Are you there?
Good morning.
You know, we've been announcing the walks that you're having, but I know you're having some other things that are like the bird watching at the campground. I thought that was pretty neat. Could you tell us a little about that?
Sure. Actually, starting last spring, or about a year ago, we became aware of an opportunity to write a small wildlife grant to the Iowa DNR. And so we went through that process, and they awarded us funds to build a small structure called a blind. Basically, it just looks like a small lean-to shed, and there's a 4 or 5 inch opening across the front and bird feeders on the other side. And so we were able to build that with those funds this fall. And starting in November, we started to participate in the Cornell Lab Feeder Watch program, where we sit one day a week or 2 days a week, depending on the circumstances, and collect data on what kind of birds we're seeing and how many, and then I submit it online, and it helps them track what kind of species they're seeing and if there's any decline or odd sightings in different locations, and it helps scientists do their research with the different ornithology that's going on all over the country. And as a side to that, that facility is open for anybody who wants to take a hike along the trail and bring their binoculars or their guidebooks, or who may want to bring in a camera and do some photography. We were sure to create that opening that was wide enough so you could put a camera lens through there as well. And I think we've had a few takers, but it's not necessarily anything scheduled. It's always open when the park is open, and people can stop out and just enjoy sitting and bird watching. We do keep food in the feeders, and we refill them once a week, so there's always food in there and always attracting birds, and we'll be doing that through April.
Oh, what an interesting opportunity. You said it's always open when the park is open, and when is that?
There are no gates on the park, but there is a park ranger that monitors traffic flows. Typically sunrise to sunset is our time that we're open, but it could go as late as 10:30. That was our posted time, but most of the times when it gets dark in the winter, people are ready to head home. So, but it's really a popular spot for people to head out for a drive because we have a 160-acre lake. It's available for ice fishing, and a lot of times we have eagles that will perch and fish out of the open spot below the dam. And we also have been known to bait some food out there, too, to kind of attract the eagles, because that's a very popular, again, just kind of a not a scheduled event, but just a passive thing that goes on, bird watching with the eagles and with the smaller feeder birds. Ice fishing happens year-round. Anybody with a fishing license and ice fishing equipment is welcome to come out and drill a hole and ice fish on Don Williams Lake. And we do also allow winter camping. The only downside is there's no running water because our pipes would freeze. So we still take campers, but no hot showers.
Well, that's really it. Well, I wonder how many takers you're going to get on that one. Well, thank you so much, Emily, for being with us this morning. I really appreciate that. And your park is really, I think, a star of the area for regular activities. Other parks I saw from their websites don't have such well-developed programs.
Right. Well, we've been working hard to add more things, so thank you for that compliment. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you. And this is KHOI Community Radio, and we need to move on to another guest, and we want to talk about one of the activities that's going on over at Boone, also at the Story County Conservation Center at McFarland Park, which is ice fishing. And for that, we have Todd Jaffert. We will have him in a few minutes, who is a veteran ice fisherman, loves to ice fish, and can tell us something about the joys of ice fishing, as well as some safety tips, because that's very important when we get to the point that people are going out on the ice. They really need to know when it's safe, what the dangers are. So, Todd, are you on the phone now?
Yes, I am.
Well, that's wonderful. How often have you gone out this winter?
How many times?
Well,
So far.
What? How did you say? I didn't hear you.
I've been out a couple times so far this year.
Just a couple?
Yeah.
And what kind of fish do you usually fish for?
Bluegills and crappies mainly. We did, last time I was out, we caught a few perch, but that's usually uncommon in central Iowa.
You live over in Perry, is that right?
That's correct.
And so where do you fish?
Normally we go to southern Iowa. There's quite a few different little lakes down there. 12 Mile, Green Valley, Greenfield Reservoir, Mormon Trail, Nottoway Lake. Here in central Iowa, Big Creek, although I have not been there this year. And Brushy Creek is always a favorite because it's farther north and it freezes a little quicker. I have ice fished at Don Williams before, too, but I haven't been there for a couple of years.
Well, the most important reason that we wanted you to come on is to give our listeners some tips on ice safety. How can you tell when it's safe to go out? So I'll just turn this over to you.
It was funny. This morning I stopped at the grocery store and the lady at the checkout said, "What are you going to do this weekend?" And I said, "I'm going ice fishing." She said, "Oh, you got to be careful of the ice." Most people have this a very big misconception that with this warm weather the last couple of days that the ice is no longer safe. And that is not true. You have to keep in mind ice forms from the top down. Below you, the ice, you have water, and that water is extremely cold. Even though it's been warm during the day, that water down below has not warmed up. So you might have some rotten ice on top, but as soon as it freezes or gets below freezing, that ice will solidify and actually be a little stronger than it was to begin with. I never venture out unless I have at least 3 inches of good black ice. And sometimes that's a little spooky because that ice has just formed and it's not cracked. Most of the time, and I would tell people if they want to check the ice or when they first start going out, you want, rather than pick up a rock at the boat ramp and throw it out there, that doesn't do any good. That rock doesn't weigh near as much as you do. Step out a little bit and drill a hole. Check your ice and see how thick it is and work your way out. You have to also keep in mind the ice around the banks forms quicker than the ice out in the middle of the lake. So when you get out farther, you want to continue to check your ice. Once you have safe ice, it takes a lot early in the year, in December this year. Last year was in January before we actually had any safe ice. But once you get safe ice, it takes a lot for that ice to deteriorate enough that you can't get on it again. The thicker the ice, obviously, the more it takes to have that ice deteriorate. The biggest the biggest threat to ice is not necessarily warm weather. It's moving water. Once that warms up and you get water standing on top of the ice, you have to be extremely, extremely careful, because that moving water with wind blowing across the ice, that will cut ice and make it rotten in a very, very quick period of time. Also, a good melt. This melt we had the last couple of days, there wasn't enough snow really to cause a runoff to speak of. So you don't have water running into the lakes and ponds. But when you have a melt in the spring or you get rain and you get runoff, now it's running underneath the ice. And that is will melt that ice from underneath because you have warmer water coming in. So that's the key is you just have to be careful. Check your ice early in the year when you're going out, and then later on in the year, too. By the end of the year, if it continues to stay as cold as it is, we should have 12, 15, maybe 20 inches of ice. It's hard to tell. But that ice will get rotten on top first, and when you're drilling a hole, it'll come up in chunks. As long as you've got good ice underneath it, you're fine. But if it comes up in chunks and you don't have a nice smooth hole, you don't want to be on that ice. You need to get off. If you get some nice smooth hole underneath that rotten ice, you're still fine because that ice will hold you. And ice will hold a lot of weight.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for this safety program. I mean, this is probably the most important thing we'll say today. We might save somebody's life or allow people to go out securely now that they know where the dangers are and how to keep safe.
As I said earlier, your biggest threat to ice is moving water. It's not necessarily warmer temperatures. So if you have water on top of the ice, be very, very careful. I wouldn't venture out unless it's later on in the year, say in late February and March when it's starting to warm up, because you have a lot of good ice underneath it. But the moving water, either underneath the ice or on top of it, will make that ice very unsafe in a very short period of time.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate, Todd, your coming on our program today. And thanks a lot.
No problem.
And good fishing this weekend.
Thank you very much.
This is KHOI Community Radio. We have one more activity to tell you about out at Camp Hanasha, a wonderful program there for children. There are three activities for children. Go to Camp Hanasha if you are interested in children's activities. They have overnight on New Year's Eve. Really fabulous. They pick up kids in Ames and take them out to Camp Hanasha. So it's something to find out about.
We'll put a link to their website on KHOI's website if anybody wants to look more into the Camp Hanasha.
That's right. Their phone number is 515-432-1417, and the website is campfireiowa.org, campfireiowa.org.
And again, the phone number is 515-432-1417.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today we have been talking about Heartland Senior Center in Ames, the Christmas dinner at Food at First, new space available at First Christian Church in downtown Ames, and winter activities in the surrounding area.
Our guests for today's program have been Klaus Rudenberg, my father, talking about Heartland Senior Center, Chris Martin, Director of Food at First, Mary Jane Button Harrison, Minister of First Christian Church, Emily Klein, Naturalist at Don Williams Park, Todd Javert at Ice Fisherman. We also talked about Camp Hanasha. KHOI volunteers for today's show were reporter Kay Puttock and a new voice to Local Talk, Ron Gardner. He's also host for the Alan Watts Lecture Series, which we have on Sunday from 8 to 10 p.m., Ron, can you just give us one or two sentences? We're running short on time, but just tell us.
Alan Watts is a Zen and Buddhist master, and he talks a lot of eclectic ideas that are in kind of awaken our thought process. But one thing I've learned, and I say it every time I'm on the air, is We don't have to convert. We just listen to what he has to say and then decide.
He's actually very humorous.
Yes, he gets pretty deep sometimes, too.
Yeah. So anyway, thank you so much for joining us today, Ron. And as we go out today, we're going to air your community calendar that's being played for this week. So we'll play that as we go out. The music we heard today was from the CD Planet Passengers, which is a local group. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. And you can also listen to the show and all of our past local talk shows online on our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see also listings of our past guests and resources and contact information.
Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
Let's go out with Community Calendar, which you can hear every day at 11:55 and 3:55.
Community Calendar for events from December 28th to January 3rd. Something to do. The HC Hikes is an informal Sierra Club group that emphasizes outdoor exercise on Sunday afternoons from December to March by exploring and enjoying local public areas, primarily in Story County. December 29th, they hike through Brookside Park. January 5th, Peggy's Trail in Reactor Woods, north of Ontario Street and Shoal Road. Contact hchikes.org. Also, review their hike comfort suggestions, dress for the weather. Hike coordinators are Cindy Barrowcliffe and Jeff White. For more information and specific meeting points, email cindy.barrowcliffe, B-A-R-R-O-W-C-L-I-F-F, @gmail.com or jeff.white613@gmail.com. In Union, Iowa, northeast of Ames, on December 31st, there will be a curbside recycling day. For more information, contact the Union City Hall, 641-486-2302, or email cityhallunion@unioniowa.com. Somewhere to go. The Aldo Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture announces the Wisconsin School for Beginning Market Farmers from Friday, January 10th to Sunday, January 12th, 2014, at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. This intensive workshop provides a comprehensive look at what it takes to start and operate a business growing and selling fresh vegetables. This is responding to the rising demand for local and organic food. With the rapid growth in farmers markets and community-supported agriculture farms, stores, restaurants, and institutions are seeking locally produced vegetables. Registration deadline is January 2nd. Contact John Hendrickson at the Center for Integrated Agriculture Systems in Wisco, 608-265-3704. Email jhendric@wisco.edu. Learn more locally at the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture, 294-3711, leopold.iastate.edu. Email leocenter@iastate.edu. Something to think about. A set of policy questions have been set before the Ames City Council. Should the city expand its financial commitment to provide community gardens on parks and recreation lands? If so, what level of service should be provided? And where should the gardens be located? There are over half a dozen community-based gardens in Ames, many on private property. Potential garden plots on city property could be at Patio Homes West, Christopherson Park, Carr Park, and Lloyd Kurtz Park. These sites would be in addition to the current community garden site on South Maple at Squaw Creek Park. Also, with a pluck at the heartstrings only a bereaved parent could know, the Ames City Council is being asked to consider constructing a children's memorial park, probably within an existing park, for a quiet place for parents and families who grieve the loss of a child. Probably within an existing park, for a quiet place for parents and families who grieve the loss of a child,
to reflect and find hope, with an opportunity to purchase a tree, brick, stone, or bench in their child's memory. This memorial park could be in addition to, or perhaps part of, the Moore Memorial Park Pond in Northwest Ames, which is currently being renovated. This project would be funded mainly through donations, a difficult inquiry to say no to. To comment upon these proposals, send your phone calls, cards, and letters and emails to the City Council representative for your ward, found at cityofames.org, then click on Our Government, then on Mayor and City Council. Send a CC to the City Manager's office and to your community radio station, KHOI Radio, at gmail.com, or KHOI 410 Douglas, Ames 510. We will be pleased to hear from you. This is your town, too, so speak up. These are some of the events happening in your KHOI listening area. Stay tuned for more, and thanks for listening.